Aloha, this is Catherine Cruz. Mahalo for joining us. Hawaii Talks on the Conversation. It is Monday, June 2nd. The president's budget bill includes cuts to broadband. We hear from the lieutenant governor about what that means for Hawaii's broadband initiative, Kākou Connect. We also get an update on the effort to provide more opportunities for preschool-age keiki. So far, it looks like Head Start money may be spared from cuts. We get the latest on Keiki Ready. And all you need to know about Medicare fraud, what are the latest scams flooding the system? Plus, how could tariffs affect a trendy toy? Labubu lament. The popular plush toy is already pricey and hard to find. And recycling plastics, making a fashion and environmental statement through your eyewear. You're tuned to The Conversation here on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. The goal of closing the digital divide, ensuring fast internet speeds for all, was embraced as a goal for public good. But last month on social media, President Donald Trump targeted the Digital Equity Act as racist and illegal and is proposing cuts. The spending bill that squeaked by the House on one vote is now under scrutiny in the Senate. We sat down with Lieutenant Governor Sylvia Luke Friday afternoon. She's headed to Washington, D.C. this week to talk with federal officials on a number of issues. But she says Hawaii stands to lose $6 million in broadband funding under the president's proposed spending bill.
You know, when we talk about broadband and internet access, coming out of COVID, broadband is something that became top of mind issue for a lot of our residents. Before that, you know, broadband was something that was there and people really didn't pay attention to it until the internet went down or you couldn't do streaming and you have those, you know, sometimes those irritating loading signals that keep coming on your phone or keep coming on your laptop. But broadband became top of mind issue during COVID and coming out of COVID. And we rely on broadband now more than ever on telehealth, on online learning, even to do research, even to do things like workforce. You can do work from home. And if people are sick, you know, they can still continue to be connected. And because we are an island state, broadband becomes even more important. So many of our neighbor islands, they don't have healthcare access. And the only way they can get quality healthcare is you got to fly to a different island or you got to fly to the continental U.S. But now with broadband, with reliable broadband, it could be a game changer for a lot of our residents in our remote areas, even online learning. So, for instance, you know, there are many neighborhoods that want Hawaiian immersion, Hawaiian medium opportunities. And because we don't have enough teachers, sometimes broadband services are one of the ways that we can provide different type of online learning or different type of training. So broadband is so important. And one of the things that we really touted, because our office is heading up the Connect Kākou initiative, which is to provide every resident in the state of Hawaii high, reliable internet service, affordable, reliable internet service. And that is really important because it is a game changer. And no matter where you live, whether it's in Na'alehu or Puna or Kekaha, you know, I mean, we should try to equalize the playing field for many of the communities. And we were so grateful to the federal government during the prior administration because they provided close to, I would say, $500 million of investment to the state of Hawaii alone to expand broadband services. And so now it's disappointing that the federal government is taking a look at some of these broadband initiatives and taking it down and terminating or suspending. So the amount that we're talking about, so let's put that in perspective. So broadband is, when we look at broadband, it's a three-legged stool. So we need the infrastructure, which is the lines, right? And then the second thing is, even with the infrastructure, you need the devices. So these are the digital the laptops or pocket Wi-Fis or even your phone, you need the devices. But the third thing, which is an important component, is we need to bring digital literacy up for our residents. Because even if we have the infrastructure, we have the devices, if people don't know how to use it, then all those amounts that we have invested becomes wasted. And the part that we are very disappointed in is the $6 million that has been canceled goes directly into digital literacy. And we were working with the various county folks to engage the community organizations and nonprofits to see what is the best way to bring digital literacy up in the entire state.
Yeah, whether it's what, classes at the local library, that kind of thing?
It's classes at the libraries, classes at community centers, or even like people setting up pop-ups, or, you know, do they go into different kind of meetings and having folks, having gathering places where people can come and ask questions. So this is a kind of an important part. And even as government, as we transition a lot of our services to online, it doesn't help people if people don't know how to sign up for services. So we have to be very cognizant as we move towards digitizing, as we transform government services to online platform, we have to think about the population who may not know how to navigate through online web portals.
So you've got the $6 million that you were hoping to earmark for the education component. What other losses are we facing on the other end?
So far, it's just been the $6 million known as the Digital Equity Fund. And as I explained to others, because the name, unlike the other broadband funding, because the name specifically said digital equity, I think that's why it became one of the targets from the White House, because they've been targeting things that have words like equity, inclusiveness, and diversity. So it is kind of unfortunate because when we think of digital equity, it's much more than the standard DEI component. It is trying to bring everybody up to speed on how to use internet.
A lot of this is tied to geography, right? If you're in remote areas, you might have less access to these services.
Absolutely. And this digital equity funding specifically charged the states to concentrate our efforts helping kupuna, helping veterans, helping the disabled. So these are the population that we targeted as trying to provide even more effort. And, you know, when you think about even veterans, I mean, these individuals, you know, they provide so much service to our country and for national security and for the federal government not to recognize the efforts that they put in. And then when we have help that specifically say, oh, no, with this money, help veterans, and for that to be canceled, it's really disappointing.
Well, what are the chances that that's going to hold? I mean, if he zeroed out this fund, is there any chance that the Senate, you know, would restore some of it?
Yeah, so one of the upside is our Attorney General, Ann Lopez, has been very aggressive and active. And she is currently exploring whether this is something that the state should challenge. The Attorney General and many of the Democratic Attorney Generals around the nation have been very successful in reversing many of the executive orders and many of the detrimental decisions that have come down from the White House. So right now, they are in exploratory fact-finding stages. We do know that one other state is thinking of challenging, because what we have learned from the past court decisions is if it's something that has been passed by Congress, which digital equity funding was, then the White House cannot cancel or terminate a program if it was specifically authorized by Congress.
Right. So those are the things they're going to have to weigh and figure out if they'll prevail if they do file anything. But yeah, I mean, it is a little disheartening to think that this has become so politicized.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is something that's going to help not just blue states, but red states as well. And it's going to help so many people, not just in the state of Hawaii, but throughout the entire nation. And I know, Catherine, you feel the same way, but, you know, we have never had a situation where each of us were paying so much attention to what is going on in the White House and what's coming out of the White House. And every day we wake up and the first thing that we look at, even our office, our staff, they look at what new executive order is coming out. And this type of approach where you're legislating through executive orders and terminating things that people have started work and relied on is not a good thing for our nation.
It's a moving target. It's a lot to keep track of because it changes, it seems, hourly. Anything else you want to say about the digital divide?
This is a really good program. Connect Kākou is a initiative that we want to ensure that we provide high-speed, reliable internet throughout the entire state. And this is one component of what is needed to accomplish that. So we will continue to do work to ensure that our residents get what they need for internet access.
Was this a program where you spent X amount of dollars and were trying to get reimbursed, or was this money that you were just expecting to come into a bank account?
This is not one of those reimbursable drawdowns. This is something that was supposed to be a grant.
That was Lieutenant Governor Sylvia Luke, who was talking about the state's potential loss of a $6 million grant for digital education. The money had been budgeted for outreach over a five-year period. You know, 2 months ago, the Trump administration planned to cut Head Start programs, but in May, that decision was reversed amidst a pushback, and so program funding was restored in the House budget. But it's unclear what changes the Senate will make to the spending bill. Lieutenant Governor Sylvia Luke addressed those uncertainties when we asked her about her preschool initiative, the Ready Keiki program.
So our Ready Keiki initiative is an effort to ensure that all 3 and 4 year olds have access to preschool education, high quality preschool education. And a few months ago, we heard that the White House and the federal administration was poised to eliminate Head Start. Head Start funding was crucial for the state of Hawaii, and Head Start is something that is specifically allocated for some of our low-income families. And it's not just preschool education, but it's a lot of wraparound services for their family members. So it provided a specific need for a certain community. And the loss of Head Start funding, it would have had a huge impact in our state. Thankfully, that did not happen. I think a lot of the other states raised concerns about the loss of Head Start. Doesn't mean that it won't happen in the next coming years. So this is something that we're watching very closely. So that's why, you know, for the state of Hawaii, we want to make sure that regardless of what happens on the federal side, we want to continue to provide high-quality early education access for our kids. So the Ready Keiki initiative is not just about building public preschool seats, but it's supporting private providers and low-income and middle-income individuals in getting access to private childcare centers as well. So those efforts continue. And the last couple years, we've opened close to 60 public classrooms. In the next 2 years, we're planning to open another 50.
And so how are we doing as far as staffing those classrooms with teachers?
Yeah, the staffing so far has not been a huge issue. I'm just so very thankful to both Chaminade University and the University of Hawaii and Executive Office of Early Learning in being able to field a lot of those teacher positions and field candidates to fill both teachers and teachers' assistants. So far, it has not been an issue. And we've been aggressively working with our university systems and the legislature to ramp up even more teachers for the next several years. Recently, we visited the Big Island, where we opened the first one in Pauilo. And Pauilo is a small community, and so we We're very proud that we're opening in places like Pauilo, we're opening places in Na'alehu, and we visited Kihei. That was the first one in Kihei. And so for the public preschool, it's important that we go into certain areas that don't have private providers. So another one that we opened up was in East Molokai.
Yeah, so a lot of these are remote communities. And, you know, I read a report saying that our keiki, they don't really have the skills, you know, for kindergarten. And it's imperative, really, to get them at this younger age.
Right. According to the Department of Education study, only 29% of our kids are kindergarten ready. So that's why it's even more important that, you know, we need to get them this leg up in life. I hate to see a child just because their parents could not afford to send their kids to private preschool or because there was no preschools available for them, that you have a child enter kindergarten and just because they didn't have the skills automatically labeled with learning disability, and these kids don't have learning disabilities. And, you know, providing that additional leg up and providing that additional preparation for them to be ready to learn in kindergarten provides a huge confidence boost and a huge leg up for them to succeed.
The name of that program, Head Start, right? I mean, that says it all. And you just hate to have a child start their learning in a spot where they have to catch up all the time.
Exactly. And kids are smart, you know? I mean, they know if they're falling behind or, you know, they're missing something and they don't have something that somebody else doesn't. And so, you know, you don't want to put a five-year-old in that situation.
Well, you know, we're hearing a lot about tariffs and the impact on construction. Are you worried as you try to do renovation or create these new classrooms that's going to be an added cost?
Yeah, so far, you know, our renovation costs have remain very modest. In fact, all our renovation costs have come under budget. So that's the part that we're very proud of. We're not just building for the sake of building, and regardless of cost and regardless of time, we want to build in an efficient manner. That's why we were able to basically crank out so many just in the last 2 years. And we're mindful of the cost so that each dollar save is going to go towards opening more classrooms. So we're very cognizant of that.
That was Lieutenant Governor Sylvia Luke talking with us about the federal funding for Head Start and broadband programs.
Support for HPR comes from the American Heart Association in Hawaii, with hands-only CPR training June 4th on Maui and June 7th on Oahu. All are welcome to register at heart.org/Hawaii.
This happens to be Medicare Fraud Prevention Week, so what can you do to help detect the abuse in our healthcare system? Well, earlier this year, a physical therapist operating in Kailua and Aiea was sentenced to 9 months in prison and ordered to pay nearly $400,000 in restitution for healthcare fraud, charges for which he pled guilty. Nationally, billions of dollars are lost to fraud every year. The Conversation's Lillian Song sat down with Norma Kopp, who heads a group called Senior Medicare Patrol. It's one of 54 nationwide programs funded by the U.S. Administration for Community Living. The program aims to educate the public on ways to protect themselves and loved ones with free resources. The Conversation's Lillian Song sat down with Kopp to get the details.
This staggering statistic caught my attention. More than $60 billion are lost annually due to Medicare fraud, errors, and abuse. And that's a working figure, as the exact amount is difficult to determine. So share with our listeners what Senior Medicare Patrol Hawaii is doing to empower and help individuals protect themselves in a time where scams and fraud are just very rampant. How do you help prevent fraud and abuse?
Well, first off, mahalo for having us. SMP Hawaii is a federally funded volunteer program. It's statewide and it's managed by the Department of Health Executive Office on Aging. And what we do is provide prevention education that assists and empowers our Medicare beneficiaries, their ohana and caregivers, anybody that wants to learn about this. When we think about what is at stake here, we're looking at years of working hard, you know, paying the bills, saving, creating assets, paying the bills, and just this life cycle of amassing what we think are our basic right to, you know, a reasonable life. And in a matter of seconds, all of that can just be destroyed. And on that note, it's also the whole vulnerability towards losing one's personal identity. So just because kupuna or somebody older gets scammed, it doesn't stop. It doesn't end there. You know, scammers can go after the kin or the family, calabash, anybody that the person is connected with. And so I think all of us really should take a moment to make this part of our conversation, whether it's weekly or over dinner. Like, you know, what are some of the things that happens and how are we going to treat grandma should this happen to her, you know, because of dementia or cognition decline, what have you. So it really is a kako thing. You know, it's really about taking care of one another, looking for opportunities to reach out and help. Because honestly, when the sun rises again tomorrow, we're older. And before you know it, we're on the shared road called aging. So I think SMP throughout the nation and our territories of Guam, Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands, and of course, District of Columbia, we have 54 projects or programs of SMP. We've been around since 1997. We really assist and empower not just the beneficiaries and our target populations throughout the state, but we really want our volunteers to feel the power they have to encourage people to stay protected and know where to go if they become scammed.
For many people, it's embarrassing to admit because all of us think, it's not going to happen to me. I know better.
We're all humans. And as a result of that, we should all be connected because of that very fact. Supporting each other, building that safety net is critical. So with that cultural awareness of saving face, don't tell, you know, don't make it public. It's embarrassing. Honestly, where our true power comes from is in our vulnerability. But if it should happen or when it should happen, then let's regroup and be sure that we have a proactive plan or prevention or some kind of strategic plan to deal with it. And that's where SMP comes in, right? We really want people to remember PDR, prevent, detect, and report. So again, prevent is the educational part. Detect is sort of looking at your Medicare and your statements, your explanation of benefits and all of that. And if you don't know how to read it, that's what we're here for, right? But the last part of reporting it is really critical because if there was a scam, if you were part of, say, an upcoding scam, a billing issue or kickback scam, or even worse, we have scams involving hospice. SMP California, that's their number one fraud right now, is hospice scams. Should anybody get involved in that, then they really need to report it to us so that we can get to work. Now, we're not investigators, but we have a lot of agencies, partners that we work with. We're going to be the go-to for Medicare fraud. And then we'll work with the Office of Inspector General. Well, that's part of the Department of Health and Human Services in D.C. to make sure our investigative crews get on it.
You know, you had just talked about, like in California, it was a hospice scam that is the big one for them. You also mentioned upcoding billing scams. I will admit, you know, I've gone through the paperwork that comes in, and to me, it becomes pages and pages of just print. How right. do I know? How can I tell as perhaps that family member who is helping my grandma or my mom?
You know, I have to stop and say that when you talk the way you did just now describing the situation, I mean, I got chicken skin because it is so real and prevalent. I want everybody who's listening to know that we are not the minority, you know, being targeted. Scammers are so good at this. This is 24/7 for them. And they work across nations. They work across county lines. They work across hemispheres. And they sell our information. We're all Googleable. With regards to Medicare fraud, there are several types of fraud that people should be aware of. Upcoding, it's billing for more expensive services than those actually performed. That way, when the claims go in as, you know, so-called claims, they're false claims, then the reimbursement is at a higher rate. That's how scammers make their money. There's phantom billing. Phantom, think of Phantom of the Opera, right? Charging for services or equipment not provided. Never, ever give your Medicare card number out or share it with somebody. If scammers get wind of your Medicare card number, they can submit because they have the technology and all of the infrastructure that make them look like a doctor. They can also use your number to submit a claim with your name. And let's use hospice again, right? If you ever need hospice, but the scammers beat you to the pulp about using your number for hospice, guess what? You're out in cold because you're going to probably be denied of services that should have been for you, but unbeknownst to Medicare and others.
The benefit has been taken.
The benefit is done. So you got to protect the card, right? Don't carry it with you unless you really, really need to. But specifically, your doctors that you've already signed forms with and already are seeing, they should never have someone calling you asking for your number. You just hang up. Do not engage because all they need is about 20, 30 seconds of your voice. And never say the word yes because they'll use the word yes over and over again. It's called artificial intelligence and they've been using that for so long. But you have to also remember that with the Medicare statements that come in every 90 days, if you have an online account with Medicare, you can get it on demand. Those Medicare statements, which we can decode for you, that's the detection part of our mantra, prevent, detect, report. We can help people understand the anatomy or the parts of that blueprint. It says on the top, this is not a bill. It's simply a statement that explains your benefits, talks about, you know, if you want to submit an appeal, you're going to complain about it. We want people to know about these statements. It's not a bill, but many people don't know how to read it. And we encourage people to call us and we'll go through that.
This is really enlightening, I have to say. I always just took that this is not a bill paperwork for granted in the sense of like, okay, you're sending it to me because yes, dad had gone to Polymomi or he got services. So
yeah.
Yes.
But you have to look, though. At some time, you're going to go, wait, Dad, did you order a brace?
See, this is something I never, ever thought about because I trust. I mean, I believe that, oh, it looks official. But what I'm hearing now, somebody can totally spoof this.
Yeah.
Sending this into Medicare, getting it approved. And of course, I'm going to be getting this paperwork that says this is not a bill. And if I'm just laissez-faire about it, I just put it aside and never look at it, they get away with it.
You know, you opened up this discussion with, you know, piles of mail and so forth. I'm going to give you a real story. There was a woman who contacted. Now, we have four counties, right? Maui County, Hawaii County. So we have Office of Aging everywhere. So city and county is called Elderly Affairs. Hawaii County is called Hawaii County on Aging, Maui County on Aging. Kauai has a fancy name called Kauai Agency on Elderly Affairs. Anyway, there are four counties on aging. And if you live on the U.S. continent, they're called area agencies on aging. One client called Hawaii County and said, I have so much mail. Can one of you staff members help me open mail? And so one of our program specialists on Hawaii County in Hilo said, Norma, this is an actual story. I'm opening mail and I'm finding that there's a bill and in there is a bunch of visits for COVID that she never did, you know? So this fell into a billing error where the doctor, I'm not going to say where, the staff said, oh, sorry, e kala mai, that was a mistake. There were three visits that she got charged for. But here we go. Kupuna's going overwhelmed with mail. She asked the county, right? If you don't ask, you don't know. And I applauded the client saying, Auntie, thank you for calling County on Aging. I'm glad they got to help open mail with you. She said, well, thank you so much because I didn't know what this was because she hadn't opened mail, right? So no big deal. But you know what? It is a big deal, especially if it's wrong.
So true. Somebody's getting money somewhere.
Fraud is where there is that scratch and sniff criminal intent potential. And then errors could be intentional, but it could also be unintentional. In this case, it was unintentional. And abuse really is products and services that are really subpar. They're not of that quality and they've been ordered or whatever. And they may be episodic. I mean, it just happened once or twice. So it's hard to sometimes prove criminal intent. But in any event, that's our landscape of work, fraud, errors, and abuse. And all we ask people to do is PDR, prevent it through education with us, detect it so you can learn the vocabulary and the documents, and then report it, PDR, prevent, detect, and report. Report it, because you never know. Your case might be the winning case to make this a national awareness thing, or it just may be the fact that you do it because it's for the greater good.
That was Senior Medicare Patrol Director Norma Kopp and HPR's Lillian Song. S&P Hawaii joins 43 nationwide programs participating in Medicare Fraud Prevention Week, a free educational webinar on Saturday, June 7th from 10 to 11 via Zoom. We'll cover the latest scams and how to protect yourself. We'll share links on our website. We've been looking at the effect of tariffs on all kinds of businesses, but today, what's its effect on pop culture? Here to talk about that is HPR's Cassie Ordonio. Good morning.
Good morning, Catherine. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So what is it that we're focusing on exactly?
We are talking about this cultural craze, Labubu. And Labubu are these plush-sized keychain toys that kind of look a little demonic in the face. It has like this little grin, 9 teeth in a row, sharp teeth, in fact. But they're very plushy and fluffy, and people are going crazy over them. Here in Hawaii, in particular, they've been growing in popularity, and these keychain toys, Labubu, have been around since 2015. It was created by Hong Kong artist Cassing Lung as part of his Monsters collection, and then he signed a contract with the China-based company Pop Mart sometime in 2019. There's been more than 530 stores across the globe. Hawaii doesn't have a Pop Mart store, but there are some stores on Oahu in particular that sell Labubu. They're kind of pricey, though, but people find them cute but creepy at the same time. I've been hearing from some of my sources, they call them ugly cute. They are kind of ugly cute, though. I actually spent time with Kaimuki resident Alicia Young at the Pearl Ridge Mall a couple weeks ago, and she was in search for her second Labubu. But she came out empty-handed because stores were selling knockoffs called Lafufu, and other stores were completely sold out.
So the physical attraction to it, I think it was just more like the touch and feel of it, because it is super soft, it is pretty plushy, and the fact that the limbs can move and be put into different positions, I guess you could say, like you can have their hands up or the hands down, or can hold a bag or something, or like a flower, and then the little bunny ears that it kind of has gives something that's familiar but new at the same time. So it's like cutesy, so you kind of know what it is, but also like it's something different, so it really like piques the interest. And the fact that you can travel with it, you know, you can add it to your bag, you can add it to like jeans, belt loops. I think the accessibility to show it off as well is kind of exciting.
But I guess the big question is, how much more in price are these things going to go up, right?
So the retail price for Labubu on the Pop Mart website, or even on the continental US, they're $21.99. This is before tariffs, but with tariffs, it bumped up to $28.99. However, you go on the Pop Mart store, I think they restock every Sunday, but once they restock that Sunday evening, they sell out within minutes. Whoa. There are times where I'll check, trying to see how long they're going to be in stock. I actually counted 3 minutes, it all sold out. Here in Hawaii, though, because there's no Pop Mart store, there's some stores like Kauai Corner, or there's even a vape store in Aiea that sell Labubu. But they come in like 3 versions. The most recent version of the Labubu collectible blind boxes, the most I've seen them sold at that vape store was $90. So it's not so much the tariffs that is making people not want to buy them. They're still buying them despite the tariffs, but it's the economics. It's the supply and demand. Because Labubu is so popular and people want to get their hands on them, there's not enough Labubu to go around. You look at K-pop star Lisa from Blackpink and the singer Rihanna, they have worn their Labubu on their accessory bags, their Birkin bags, their Louis Vuitton, Prada, really showing them off. And then you can dress them up also kind of like in designer clothes. There's a store in Aiea that's dedicated to Labubu clothing.
Wow. Crazy.
You look at Pop Mart. Pop Mart has made so much money off of this keychain figurine. It's kind of like the Hello Kitty of Sanrio. Pop Mart reported a net profit of over $400 million in 2024. That's triple the amount it had in 2020. Pop Mart's report attributes that increase to the global phenomenon of Labubu. Before, I was saying there's more than 530 stores across the globe, but there's no Pop Mart store in Hawaii. Even council member Radiant Cordero has her own collection. She has about seven, including her husband's collection, but she got her first Labubu set somewhere in Asia where it's much cheaper, around $20, $25 compared to here in Hawaii, $60 to $80. She speaks about her small collection and the appeal of blind boxes.
Whether we are in a recession or heading towards a recession, that there's a way to invest in some type of treat yourself without spending too much. Like Labubu, it can be $25 or it can go up to $100, depending on how much you're willing to, but it costs less than an apartment or a home or buying yourself a new vehicle. These Labubus, these blind boxes, these trends can oftentimes be in place of those treat yourself aspects. And I think that although you're spending up to $600 on it, you're not spending $1.4 million, which is the average cost of a home here on Oahu. So there's those aspects of it. But I do hope people be careful with how much they are spending.
She did mention that there is kind of this gambling element to it. You might get the one that you want or you might not get the one that you want. And the one that you don't get, you kind of psychologically want to get another one automatically. So the price kind of increases as you keep buying these boxes.
Right. So they're little grab bags, mystery prize inside.
Exactly. Kind of like Pokemon cards, too. Mm-hmm. Like you don't know which card you're going to get, but you're always going to keep spending money to get the one that you want to complete the collection or just get that exact one that you want. I spoke with Xavier Urbano, who sells Labubu on the side. He sells them for $40. So still kind of pricey, but not as much as like the $90 boxes I was talking about.
There's multiple different factors that raise the price. So let's say you're a vendor and you're buying it from my experience, a Japanese wholesaler for Labubus, right? By the time you get your orders of cases to Hawaii, you're paying at that first vendor's price, which is probably 10 to 20% over the retail. Once it lands in Hawaii, you're going to have to sell that for even 20, 30, 40% more than what you got it here for any profit. Whoever's selling the Labubus, such as myself, we're going to have to raise it a certain amount just to make profit off of what we have because we can't sell it at retail. That just doesn't make sense. You know, then you're just kind of losing money or breaking even. Whoever's selling that definitely is riding the hype of Labubu. And those prices aren't going to last very long.
But others say it probably might, as long as like people are still showing it off on like their designer bags or their backpacks. I'm also guilty of being on that hype train. It started off with one, which is what sparked that story, because I'm like, why is this thing $60? And so I went and bought another one, and I think I spent over $100. That's my guilty pleasure right now.
Well, thank you for introducing them to me. I might have to go out and buy one. You never know.
Donate one to you
there
to
you
save
go.
Money.
All right. Thanks so much, Cassie.
Thanks for having me.
We've been hearing from Cassie Ardonio. Look for her stories online, hawaiipublicradio.org.
Support for HPR comes from Haleakala Ranch with a legacy of livestock, conservation, and land stewardship since 1888, working to restore, maintain, and preserve the open vistas and natural beauty of Maui. More at haleakalaranch.com.
Tune in to HPR 2 tonight at 8 p.m. for the last in our series of Hawaii Symphony Orchestra Masterworks concerts. Under the direction of Maestro Dane Lam, we'll hear Stravinsky's Petrushka and La Mer by Claude Debussy. We'll also hear Nahoku Opio Fanfare and the Suite from Reis Hawaiki by Michael Thomas Fumai. That's tonight at 8 p.m. on HPR2, sponsored by the Rice Partnership.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors Ulupono Initiative and Ruby Tuesday Hawaii.
Beach cleanups take place all the time across the state, but what do you do with all that plastic once it's been collected? Well, one optometry office in Kailua has an idea. Brian Daniel Moore and his wife, Dr. Lauren Mordu, opened a company called Out to See. It started a special line of eyeglass frames made by you. The company offers the opportunity to walk in with a bag of beach plastic and walk out with new frames. The Conversation's D.W. Gibson recently spoke with Moore about the program.
My wife's an optometrist, and we open our own practice. It's a full-on vision eyewear boutique, and we wanted some way to tie in our own frame line, right? And we live in Kailua. We've been there for about 8 years, and there's just a lot of plastics on the beach. Everybody talks about it. There's beach cleanups all the time. It's great. You clean them up, and then they come right back, right? So it's great to clean them. And then what? Where do they go? And everyone's kind of like, yeah, we don't really know what happens with them. And we thought, you know, it'd be great. They're actually kind of some pretty colors in the plastics, right? You have these turquoise and blues and reds. And could we make something out of this? And that kind of led into, well, or an optometry practice, it would be make sense to make frames, right? But mostly it was about connecting to what's around you. Because we buy products now, we don't really know where they come from. They're kind of inexpensive. They break. We buy another one. Doesn't really care. We'll spend a little bit of money, but we just keep spending more and more money on them. And then we create more and more waste. But how could we feel connected to a product? And what better way to feel connected than a beach you love? Removing that plastic. No one wants the plastic there. Removing that plastic from the beach you love and then using it in an effective way and feeling connected to it through every day, through actually seeing the world a little bit differently, right? Through a pair of lenses. And this two kind of cool things that happen with that. One, you feel emotionally connected to the products that you have. You can actually build the product at Out to See. So then that's another kind of emotional connection to a product when you actually build it and it works and you've created it. You feel a good sense of self-worth over it. And then that plastic that is on your face is not on your beach, right? So it's just a little bit, but it's a nice reminder that that plastic's not in a bird's mouth, it's not in a turtle's mouth. It's not an eyesore on the beach. And it's also a conversation starter in a way. So that was the idea. And then, yeah, I have a background in photography, filmmaking, storytelling. And I thought it would be a fun test to see, can we create a brand and a story around this? That's where we came up with Reflect. And Reflect meaning reef, like from the reef, like this plastic floated across our reef. And then a reflect, like, a, you know, lenses. And then a reflect on the problem. So it's kind of like a three-way name. And so we're trying to tie it all in. And we're working a deal with Hawaii Wildlife Fund where 10% of all the proceeds go back towards Hawaii so we can keep this cycle going where those proceeds will go back to further beach cleanups, preservation of wildlife, but keeping it all in Hawaii. So the plastic comes from Hawaii. We built the machine here in Hawaii and the proceeds that go from the profits go back to the community.
So many things packed into what you said there. It's all of the components you mentioned. The first place my mind goes to is the fact that you pointed out sometimes these little bits of plastic are beautiful, right? They're really wonderful colors.
Right.
I know that when my family's done beach cleanups, my wife sometimes will grab a select few pieces that she really likes and takes them home. And we have a little jar of beautiful small pieces of plastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
So just to be clear for listeners, I can take that bowl of beautiful small plastics that my wife has gathered over time, show up at your doorstep of Out to See Optometry with an appointment, of course, and I can use that plastic to fashion my eyeglass wear.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep.
You also brought up the fact that, you know, we might not even necessarily need all of this plastic in our life, but it's there, right? So we often talk about trying to reduce plastic use, but what you're talking about is plastic that's already out there in the universe that is gathering at our shoreline and doesn't necessarily have a place to go. And you bring up a good point. People often do beach cleanups and, you know, what to do with all that plastic actually remains a question. Mm-hmm. And this is a place where that material can go. You mentioned people can come in and build their own frames. Talk about how that actually happens, that hands-on experience.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're still pretty early in this process, so we don't have, like, a formalized way of doing it yet. But basically what happens is you can come in and you can bring in the plastics. We have plenty of plastics, so don't worry about having to bring plastic. But a lot of people want to bring, like, the pieces that they like. And then what we do is we mix it all up. We show you how the machine works. The machine, it's an injection mold, so we melt the plastic. We inject it into a mold, and then we can pop out the mold. And then we have hinges, screws, and lenses pre-cut. But we also have another mold just for the temple. So you can get completely different color temples, however you want. And then we press the temples and we give you the little tiny screwdrivers. It's kind of a challenge if you haven't done it much with the hinges, and you can fasten them all yourselves. Actually, being a photographer, it reminds me a lot of shooting on film. If you're old enough, you would remember actually going to develop film and not knowing what you shot until you got it. So when you're popping the melted plastic out of the frame, it's actually kind of exciting because you're like, oh, this one came out really cool. Look at the swirl right here, right? This really color swirl. Oh, that's perfect. So it's a kind of exciting reveal. And then we heat up your frame just a little bit to make it a little bit more malleable once you've already made it. And then we have the lenses you can choose. We have like a neutral gray and then an amber color. We have polarized, non-polarized. And then you can try your hand at popping the lenses in, or we can help you do it.
Yeah, because I was wondering about the actual color and how it works with the mold. So I can bring in various colors of plastic, but there's that element of surprise that will always remain, right? I don't know exactly how they'll come together.
Yeah, and I don't either. So we can put all those colors in the tube, but we kind of have an idea of what color might come out. But where we're getting all the little swirls, and if we can get this perfect gray mixed with the blue, is going to be a bit of a challenge. So sometimes we go through frames and they're just like, nope, this one's, and we'll just do another one, right? And then we can break down that frame we made, we can grind it up again, and then use that again.
Do-over.
Yeah.
It also makes me think of those old days in school doing spin art. You know, you kind of know what you're doing.
Yeah, but
until the wheel stops turning and you see what you've got, you don't really know what you've got.
Yeah, I think that is a perfect analogy. You can bring your colors and stuff, but you don't know where the colors are going to fall, right? Yeah. But you have an idea of what colors we're going to mix, right?
Well, and you mentioned having a lot of plastic on hand. It sounds like you might be receiving donations.
We've had a bunch of people that know of our shop from the area bring in plastic. And we have buckets of plastic, like more than I could single-handedly make for a while. I was kind of surprised how much plastic really just flooded us without asking.
Yeah, as you said, we can do beach cleanups every weekend and still have more to do.
Yeah.
Talk about the machinery. Is this something you source?
Yeah, so I mean, that's the beauty of the internet, right? Like, no matter what idea you have, there's probably like 100 people that have thought of it before. So I was researching like crazy. I found one company out of Spain that had drawn up plans for a mold and a machine. And then I sourced the plans, which, I mean, the plans were really just a giant glue gun. I mean, so I got the plans from them, but then we completely modified them because I didn't want to have to bring in material. I just wanted to build with what we already had in Hawaii. This was not easy to do, by the way. Just build something, a one of one in Hawaii, it just like doesn't happen. Like most, and please tell me if I'm wrong, please tell me where the engineers are that are building one of ones, because I have a lot of things I want to build, but it's not very cost effective to do that. But I found a crazy enough engineer that was able to help me. You know, he had plenty of the metals, and we redesigned things to fit exactly how we wanted to do it. And then just the look of the machine too. I wanted the machine to look cool because I feel like that's part of the story, right? It's kind of a cool contraption to see. And then, but just designing a lever, we designed a lever so that we could apply maximum force. But I mean, if you've ever used a glue gun, it's basically that. The glue is the plastic, right? And it just heats it up and then it forces, you pull the trigger, it forces it through a nozzle, and then that pours into the mold. But now that we have the mold's easy, that you can 3D scan it. And then the idea is you can 3D scan it, you can make little adjustments. So we started with two different shapes. We have kind of like a Wayfarer shape, which I think Ray-Ban made pretty popular, and then more of a, like a circular shape. And the Wayfarer one is a bit larger, and then the circular shape's a bit smaller. So nobody has the same size face. That's the crazy thing about frames is that's why there's so many, because everybody's face shape, you wouldn't think it, but they all feel a little different. We found these to be the most two kind of common. shapes, and they pretty much one or the other will fit most anybody.
And giving people a chance to wear frames that are made from plastic that used to be on their hometown beach that is no longer there.
Yeah, exactly.
Great idea. That was HPR's C.W. Gibson talking with Brian Daniel Moore from Out to Sea, an optometry office in Kailua that offers the chance to turn beach plastic into eyeglass frames. Well, that does it for us today. Tomorrow, we plan to hear about the premiere of a new play at the Kumukahua Theater. It's the final production of their 54th season. Have a story to share with us? Call our talkback line and record something, 808-792-8217. You can find the conversation segments, including all our past shows, on our website, or we're available as a podcast on Spotify and Apple. I'm Catherine Cruz. We'll be back tomorrow with more of The Conversation.